Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and in this program we talk about the greatest medical and environmental threats to all life, such as nuclear weapons and nuclear power, global warming, ozone depletion, toxic pollution, deforestation, and many other social and political issues that relate to global well-being. So if you love this planet, keep listening. Hello and welcome to the program. My guest today is Dr. Jeanette Sherman, a specialist in internal medicine and toxicology. She's published more than 70 articles in the scientific literature and also writes for the popular press to provide information to the concerned public. Dr. Sherman is the author of Life's Delicate Balance, Causes and Prevention of Breast Cancer and Chemical Exposure and Disease. She has recently completed the translation and editing of the book Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and Nature, published by the New York Academy of Sciences in December 2009. Jeanette Sherman has been an advisor to the National Cancer Institute on Breast Cancer and to the EPA on pesticides. She is a resource person, advisor, and speaker for universities and health advocacy groups concerning cancer, birth defects, pesticides, toxic dump sites, and nuclear radiation. Currently, she is adjunct professor at the Environmental Institute, Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, and research associate and lecturer with the Radiation and Public Health Project. Dr. Sherman, welcome to If You Love This Planet.
Well, thank you. It's good to hear you.
Yes, good to hear you too. We've been sort of working in parallel for many years, haven't we? You've been a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility way, way back.
Yes, and the IPPNW, both of them. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But you are, of course, the originator.
Yes, well, if you look at Wikipedia, it doesn't say that, but yes. Anyway, look, I read the Chernobyl book yesterday. It's extremely important because, you know, there are over 5,000 scientific and medical papers that have been interpreted. And the problem is that most of the papers were written in Russian and the like. And would you like to give us a history, Dr. Sherman, of the way the nuclear industry and the International Atomic Energy Agency and the WHO, World Health Organization, have really, I suppose, not told the truth about data at all, nor explored what's happened to the people in Europe, Russia, Belarus, Ukraine, and et cetera, post-Chernobyl?
Well, the WHO and the IAEA essentially covered only articles in the English language when they came out with a report saying, well, there really wasn't that serious a problem from Chernobyl. What has happened, however, was that Alexei Yablokov, who was an advisor to Gorbachev, and was instrumental in getting the above-ground nuclear testing stopped, and he and Vasily Nestorenko, who was head of the Ukrainian nuclear department, started collecting articles on Chernobyl, and I think they collected something like 30,000 of them. What they did essentially was translate and abstract about 5,000 of them that are in the book that was just recently published by the New York Academy of Sciences and Wiley-Blackwell. These show an entirely different story than what the WHO and IAEA came out with. These articles were written by people on the ground who witnessed Chernobyl, largely people from Belarus, Ukraine, Russia, and then also quite a few articles from Europe, Greece, a few from the United States, not many. But they essentially put together what they were seeing. Now, these were social scientists, physicians, nurses, statisticians, epidemiologists, people from various fields. And when you look at the total picture from these many, many articles, over 5,000, you a pattern of injury and environmental degradation certainly appears.
Okay, so would you like to, well, first of all, let's talk again about the relationship between the International Atomic Energy Agency and the World Health Organization, both of which are United Nations organizations, and why have they obscured the data and not looked at articles that were not written in English? Can you just describe that first?
Okay, well, the WHO and the IAEA have an agreement that goes back, that they signed in 1959, that requires that each one of them must get the approval of the other before they can release any information.
About
so
what?
Essentially,
information?
Essentially, they're in the same side.
Right, information about nuclear accidents.
Well, nuclear accidents or the effects of nuclear radiation.
So how can you explain the philosophical morality, if you will, or amorality about this agreement and the fact that they have really never examined the profound medical consequences of the worst nuclear power accident in the world?
I don't think very many people have actually addressed it or looked at the agreement that the IAEA and World Health Organization have.
Mm.
And I don't think many people have questioned it. Alexei Yablokov and his associates did. Rosalie Bertel has in the past. And very few people knew, evidently looked into it and questioned it.
Yes, well, you have, and so have Yablokov et al. So it's imperative that we get this information out. So, Dr. Sherman, would you like to, as an epidemiologist and a toxicologist and a specialist in radiation biology, describe, well, first of all, let's talk about the liquidators. Tell us what liquidators were, what they did, and what have been, and what they're exposed to, and the medical consequences of that work that they did.
The liquidators are a sad commentary of the world. These were young men and some women who were conscripted across the old Soviet Union and also from other, were invited in by other countries. These were the young people who worked directly on Chernobyl after the explosion to try and contain the radiation and the accident. Unfortunately, now, 24 years later, about 80% of them are sick, and many, many have died. It's just been about 25% of the 800,000 liquidators have since died, and it's a tragedy.
What have they died from?
All kinds of diseases, cancer, heart disease, pulmonary disease, brain damage. We've heard for years that radiation causes cancer and birth defects, but also these radioisotopes that were ingested by these young men and women or inhaled by these young men and women damaged the interior of their blood vessels, causing heart disease, transported to their brains, causing brain disease, and essentially causing diseases throughout their body. The liquidators have had terrible health outcomes, as have their children.
What are we seeing in their children then?
We're seeing small birth weight, small head size, small chest size, mental retardation, chronic ill health.
And would that be a result of their ova and sperm being irradiated and damaged before the babies were conceived?
Yes. Well, and then also there was lots of radiation in the bodies of these people.
Mm.
You know, when just because they left the site and went back to their hometown, they carried with them big doses of radiation.
So that the, many of those radioactive elements would have crossed the placenta into the developing fetus, right?
I think it certainly could have.
Yeah. Can you just describe what the liquidators were asked to do? I mean, 850,000, that's nearly a million people, were brought in, and there had been an explosion. There were bits of, you know, radioactive, intensely radioactive fuel lying around the site. What actually did they do, Dr. Sherman?
They were doing cleanup work, welding, moving concrete. Doing concrete work. They tried to cover the Chernobyl reactor, the damaged reactor, with as much concrete and other materials as they could, but it's still not, 24 years later, they're still talking about building a sarcophagus, a big metal dome to go over the top of Chernobyl.
Yes,
but these were the workers who were called in work while the reactor was extremely radioactive.
Oh yes, and extruding huge amounts of radiation as they were there.
That's correct.
And also, I have read, and I believe that reactor is still in trouble, and because the remediation was so inexact and done so fast, with a sense of urgency, there's still a possibility that Chernobyl reactor could still have a meltdown again.
Let us hope not. But even if they get the reactor covered, we still have to be concerned about the bottom of the reactor, which they can't cover and which is leaking.
Leaking into the water supplies?
Yes.
Leaking radiation?
Yes, of course.
And then there are the helicopter pilots who dumped 6,720 tons of lead onto the reactor to try and stop the reaction proceeding, the fission reaction. Were those helicopter pilots, that they were heavily irradiated too, were they followed up about health consequences in later years, Dr. Sherman?
I'm not aware of any follow-up, particularly about the helicopter pilots. I do know that the lead that they dropped on the reactor landed on top of this extraordinarily hot source and became vaporized along with the radioisotopes. So you not only were giving off radioactive materials, you were also giving off lead, which added to the poisoning of the whole area.
Yes, and I read in your wonderful book, the Chernobyl book, and it's called, just for those who want to know, Chernobyl Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and Nature, that lead can synergize or aggravate or potentiate the effects of radioactive materials in the body. Is that correct?
Oh, you're absolutely correct, yes.
So instead of, by what sort of degree, you know, by 10 times, or do we have any knowledge?
I really don't know how many times it can, but if you add, you know, if you have one toxic chemical and then you add another, you've certainly made things much, much worse.
Yeah. Now, there's a thing called acute radiation illness, which we as physicians didn't know about until the bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Would you like to describe the symptoms of acute radiation illness, what sort of radiation levels cause it, and therefore how many people died in Europe and Belarus and Ukraine and Russia as a result of that acute initial dose of radiation?
You mean from Chernobyl?
Yes, please.
I don't think we know the entire number who died very soon after. Certainly the control room operators. There were several of them who died very quickly. The main thing is that a complete depression of the person's bone marrow, so they get bleeding and infection, and it's really quite a rapid death. But the thing I think that's most important in this book is the chronic low-dose radiation to which so many were exposed.
Yes, it's really fascinating to me to read about the radioactive elements that escaped and their half-lives, because people usually only talk about cesium-137, and about 40% of the European landmass is still contaminated with that cesium, which lasts for about 300 to 600 years and is very carcinogenic. But so many other elements escaped and were measured, in fact, all around the Northern Hemisphere, including silver 210 that has a half-life of 250 days, chlorine 36 with a half-life of 30,000 years, technetium 99 a half-life of 23,000 years, plutonium, and a lot of plutonium got out, half-life 24,400 years. So, and I could go right down the list, you know, radioactive iodine and all sorts of other terribly dangerous things. So in other words, you know, the sort of the whole inventory of radioactive materials escaped from Chernobyl, some short-lived and some very long-lived. Would you like to extrapolate on that, Dr. Sherman?
Well, the issue with this is the half-life, which, and as you know, it takes about 10 half-lives for a isotope to completely decay. So if it's a 30-year half-life, you multiply that by 10 years, and we're talking about 3 centuries. But what, not only do we worry about the physical half-life of these isotopes, but one of the big issues is these isotopes are being brought down with rain and snow, goes into the soil. The trees and plants grow. They absorb the isotopes. They carry them back up in the trees to the leaves, or in plants to the leaves and the fruit and vegetables, and particularly the trees. The leaves fall again in the fall, and they're highly radioactive. And then, of course, it rains and snows on them, and the isotopes go back into the soil and are then picked up again by the plants. So you have a biological recycling of these isotopes, which is very serious. And then if there's forest fires, we have to worry about the transport of the smoke, which is radioactive, that goes long distances.
Oh, dear. I hadn't thought of that. I know about the mushrooms and the reindeer in Scandinavia being extraordinarily radioactive, and the lambs in Cumbria and Wales still being very radioactive.
You're absolutely right.
So people in Europe, Dr. Sherman, are obviously still eating radioactive food.
Yes, and particularly people in, you know, Belarus and Ukraine and the poor areas where they have no other sources but of food. Yes.
And there's so little media about that. I've just been in Spain, for instance, and Spain got a big dose. Not all over Spain, in various selected areas where it rained, hot spots. But there's absolutely no talk in the European media at all now about Chernobyl, is there?
I think there's very little talk anywhere. There was certainly, it was not covered in the major newspapers here in the United States. The Washington Post and New York Times did not carry anything about Chernobyl, which was the 26th of April, which was the 24th anniversary. There was nothing in that.
Nothing. Well, let's
talk. The only information that I'm aware of is coming out on the Internet.
Yeah, it's really, it's a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy by the nuclear industry and others to keep this quiet so the nuclear industry can get on with what it wants to do, which is build lots more nuclear reactors.
I fear you may be right.
I think I am. It's interesting that in your book, the Chernobyl book, there's a specific reference to children in Kiev, which is the capital of the Ukraine, which got a lot of radiation. And before the accident, 90% of the children were healthy. But now only 20% of children in Kiev are healthy. And in certain parts of the Ukraine, none of them are healthy. What are these children, Dr. Sherman, suffering from 24 years after the accident occurred?
Well, it's not just Ukraine. Probably the most affected country is Belarus, mm. which was just north of Chernobyl. But the children are just, they're underweight. They're generally small size. Many of the girls never start having their menstrual period.
Never.
They are they're immune compromised, so that they have lots of just infections and asthma, and just generally not well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I saw a film, and you probably have seen it too, called Chernobyl Heart.
Yes, I have.
Yes. Would you like to describe what is seen in that film, Dr. Sherman?
Well, these are tragic, absolutely a tragic film of sick, of children who are sick with birth defects, just not terribly bright. And that issue especially troubles me, because if you have a country where 80% of the children are not well, who are going to be the teachers, the musicians, the artists, the nurses, the transport workers? Who's going to carry on the country if you have 80% of the population who's not well?
And also probably slightly, many of them mentally retarded from...
Well, that's the whole problem.
Microcephaly, small heads, because they were...
Yes.
Damaged, that developing nervous system is so sensitive to the effects of radiation. I too saw the film Chernobyl Heart, and there are homes full of the most grossly deformed children I've ever seen. And I'm a pediatrician, and my colleagues, the pediatricians in those homes, said they've never seen anything like this before in their medical careers. So
I was going to comment that you, as a pediatrician, have seen this kind of these kind of developments. I just don't know how a country can survive with that much of its population unwell. Plus, you have an enormous cost to care for this many sick people.
Yes, and when the accident occurred, this old Soviet Union didn't have much money, and they didn't even have machines to measure the platelets or the white blood cells or the blood pictures, let alone really care for these survivors of the catastrophe, did they?
They did not, and I don't know if many of the areas still have adequate resources to care for sick people.
As we talk, it's beyond a major catastrophe, and it's so covered up and hidden, and so important for doctors to understand this, because, if there's a meltdown, for instance, in, 35 miles from New York at the Indian Point reactor or reactors, there are two of them there, we're going to have to be dealing with these consequences in a Western population. So It's imperative that all of us, medical profession, understand what's going on in Europe and Russia and Belarus and the Ukraine, so that we can prevent another catastrophe occurring.
Well, I think it would completely wipe out New York City if there was a meltdown at Indian Point, which is, I find, very, very troublesome.
Yes.
Right now in the United States, the news is, of course, on the big oil spill off the coast of New Orleans in the Gulf of Mexico, which is a major, major catastrophe. The only thing that could be worse if there were a nuclear meltdown in one of our 104 plants that exist in the United States.
Yes, I was talking to a nuclear engineer recently, and I said to him, what are the chances of a meltdown in America? And just straight off, he said, one in 10 in the next 10 years. And other nuclear engineers I know say it's not if but when that occurs. It seems to be imperative that we get this information out into our medical journals, Dr. Sherman. Has your book, Chernobyl Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and Nature, has it? I know it's only just come out, but I really hope that it's reviewed in all the major journals, including the New England Journal of Medicine and the like. Have you had any?
To my knowledge, it has not been reviewed in any medical journals. I'm hopeful that it will be put in some. So far, it has not.
It was published in December 2009, so it's been out for 6 months nearly.
Yes. To my knowledge, it has not been in any of the major, medical journals. It's mostly being reviewed on websites by people who, are concerned about the nuclear issues. And by the way, we must be very careful. I did not write the book. The book was written by Alexei Yablokov, Vasily Nestoranko, and Alexei Nestoranko. I was the consulting editor.
Yes, I'm sorry.
And I'm I dealt with the Russian to English translation, and which was quite difficult. But the science was the same, and the medicine was the same.
Mm.
But it took 14 months to get this book edited.
Do you speak Russian, Dr. Sherman?
No, I do not. It was sent to me. It was translated by Alexei Yablokov using a computer program.
Mm.
And I got very interesting sentences.
I'm sure.
With lots of gerunds. And I essentially rewrote the text. But I tried to follow as much as I could every single thing that was sent to me and keep it in some cogent English.
Yes. Let's talk about thyroid cancers. Now, I'm a pediatrician who's practiced pediatrics for many years. I actually have never seen a case of pediatric thyroid cancer. Can you tell us now how many people have suffered and are suffering now from thyroid cancer related to the Chernobyl meltdown?
I can't even tell you off the top of my head how many have had thyroid cancer, but it was the signature disease. It was the World Health Organization predicted a few cases here and there. It turned out there have been thousands of cases of thyroid disease and many, many, many cases of thyroid cancer. But it turned out that these thyroid cancers were very aggressive, and they had a tendency to spread, which was a very serious problem. But you also may be interested to know that in the United States, a colleague of mine by the name of Joe Mandano did a study of cancer in Pennsylvania. And in eastern Pennsylvania, the highest cancer rates were for men, women, blacks, and whites were in eastern Pennsylvania, which is very significant because it's downwind from Three Mile Island, Peach Bottom, and Limerick nuclear power plants. Now, this is the highest cancer rate in the United States.
Really?
Yes, ma'am. But then when we get back to Chernobyl, a good functioning thyroid, as you know as a pediatrician, is required for a healthy baby to be born. And if a baby is born low thyroid, the chances are that child is going to have mental retardation.
Yeah,
we not only have the disease of thyroid cancer, but we have thyroid disabilities, which are affecting the health and the mentation of the population.
Yes, they're called cretins. It's just
yes.
So it's not just thyroid cancer; it's abnormalities of the babies.
Yes.
The data I've read from Russia, Dr. Sherman, is that over 10,000 people have had thyroid cancer. And do you know, I often debate with members of the nuclear power industry, and they say, oh, well, they haven't died. In fact, as you point out, it's a very aggressive sort of thyroid cancer, a papillary carcinoma, which That's metastasizes right. fast. And these, I can't get over the fact that these nuclear energy people, who none of whom are physicians, lie. They just lie. And the public gets very confused because, you know, they're, quote, scientists, and they don't really know who to believe. Have you experienced that?
Science education, certainly in the United States, is not all that great. I mean, you have to worry about people who really are not educated in science. And when you ask somebody to just take your hand and put it over your liver, not many people know where to go.
I hadn't thought of doing that, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, a lot of people have not, really are not knowledgeable about diseases, which I think is one of the ways that people get hooked into beliefs in, you know, saying, well, there's no such thing as evolution and things like that. So you'd link all of this together and you have a promotion of ignorance, which I think is very, very troubling. I don't know if this is occurring in Australia, but it's certainly a factor here in the United States.
That would be a good title for a book. Do you want to write it? Promotion of ignorance. Let's talk about then, we've talked about thyroid cancer. Now, 5 years later, there was an epidemic of leukemia. Is that accurate? And describe, please, Dr. Sherman, what leukemia actually is.
Well, leukemia, as you know, is a dysfunction of the bone marrow. And radiation has been known for decades, since Hiroshima and Nagasaki, to result in leukemia. And we certainly saw that in people who were downwind from the Bikini Atoll test. It was predictable that there would be leukemia cases as a result of the radiation fallout. One of the isotopes that's given off from Chernobyl and also from functioning nuclear power plants is strontium 90. Now, this, as we all know, drifts off into the air. It's precipitated by rain and snow, goes into the grasses, get eaten by cattle, and it goes into the milk supply. So pregnant women and nursing mothers and young children drink this milk and eat the dairy products that contains the strontium 90. Now, strontium belongs to the same family as calcium, and therefore goes to the bones and teeth of the unborn and children, the young children. So that's, and when you go to the bones, the bone marrow is where the blood cells are formed, and they are essentially radiated inside the child's body.
And so leukemia is really cancer of the white blood cells, right?
Well, you can also have cancer of the red blood cells, too. Polycythemia vera.
Yeah.
Is also considered one of the leukemias, although it's a red cell leukemia.
So is there any estimate in the book, Dr. Sherman, of how many people developed leukemia after Chernobyl?
I would have to thumb through the book to give you the exact number, but there has been a lot, and there will continue to be more.
Yeah, I've written down here 5 to 14,000 are dead from leukemia already. And I've also written down here 10 to 40,000 are dead from thyroid cancer. And general cancers, nearly a quarter of a million people have died.
I know, it's shocking.
Quarter of a million people, that... And it's only 24 years post Chernobyl, and people can be developing cancer that, you know, for 60, 70 years until they die, because the incubation time for cancer, as we both know, is extremely long.
Well, except unless you're a child.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, because they're very sensitive and get cancer much faster than adults. So we're really actually just seeing the tip of the iceberg. Would that be correct?
I believe that's the case. And when you consider that there were people who were of reproductive age when Chernobyl happened 24 years ago, and now we are in the third generation, because if they were like 20 at that time, and another 20 years, second generation, some of those people are now having children.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is passing on this contamination to now a third generation.
Contamination from the food they ingest, radioactive food.
Right, the food and water that they ingested.
And their chromosomal defects, because radiation splits chromosomes, and, you know, a classic chromosomal defect is Down syndrome. But there are many, and also genetic abnormalities, and there are over 24,000 genetic diseases now described. Diabetes, cystic fibrosis, I mean, I could go on, and those diseases over the generations will increase in frequency, right?
Unless some of the people who are born are just not able to have children.
Yeah, they can't reproduce.
So there is some limitation, because some of the girls never start having their period, and some of the boys have significant genital abnormalities that they will not become fathers. So some of this will die out, but some will be passed on. And then, of course, there's the recycling of the isotopes through the food supply, affecting, you know, new generations. So the ultimate is very, very difficult to predict.
Have they examined the sperm of the boys to see if there are? I know there are chromosomal abnormalities that you would see, but are the sperm viable? Are they healthy?
I don't know
sperm?
If anybody has done any specific sperm testing.
Mm.
Mm. I do know that there was tremendous problems with reproduction in the liquidators.
Yes, I'm sure there was. Now let's talk about another element. You talked about heart disease and radiation inducing arteriosclerosis, heart disease, and strokes. And the person actually who did the seminal work in this was Dr. John Goffman, who tied up abnormalities of cardiovascular systems with radiation, and we're seeing that now in the European population. What about, would you like to talk about accelerated aging related to radiation exposure, Dr. Sherman?
That is absolutely fascinating, because we're seeing cataracts in children.
Cataracts.
Almost unheard of. And the kind of signs that you see in the elderly, loss of mentation, heart disease, atherosclerosis, thickening of the arteries, this kind of thing is being seen in very young people, teenagers and young adults. So we have accelerated aging is a catastrophe.
Yes,
but it's not just humans. You know, it's when you go throughout the entire biosphere over there, not every system was studied. But everyone that was studied, whether it was voles or mushrooms or bacteria or viruses or fish.
Or birds,
no matter what was studied, was changed. And many of them were changed irreversibly.
With genetic abnormalities and birth defects.
Yes, as well as, other systemic abnormalities.
Like what?
Well, it's interesting. They studied 22 generations of voles. These are little woodland creatures. And the genetic abnormalities was constant throughout all 22 generations.
Mm. Well, that's the classic experiment done by Müller when he irradiated fruit flies who reproduce very fast. And so he could watch the genetic abnormalities pass on generation to generation. He got a Nobel Prize for that. So we've actually known about this for a long, long time. I learned it in medical school, in 1956. So it's kind of nothing new. We knew that radiation induces genetic abnormalities. What about, there are a lot of people, Dr. Sherman, who became bald, alopecia. How did that happen?
It has to be some, you get, people get bald with chemotherapy too.
Yes.
But these many of these children became permanently bald with alopecia. And it has to be damage to the roots of the hair.
Yeah.
That the hair never regenerates again.
Oh, God, that's dreadful. Now, let's talk about 57% of the radioactive elements fell outside the old Soviet Union. Which were the countries in Europe that were most exposed to the fallout, Dr. Sherman?
Well, of course, it was originally picked up in northern Sweden. So it essentially has covered, you know, France, Germany, Sweden, Norway, Great Britain, Wales, Ireland,
Turkey,
and then the far eastern Asia, and essentially went around the entire northern hemisphere. There was some fallout in Canada and the United States, but not nearly as much as in Europe and the Far East.
No, and it always amuses me that the French, who are so into nuclear power, 80% of their electricity comes from nuclear power, they said that the fallout from Chernobyl stopped right at the French border.
I know, isn't that marvelous?
But now,
we should all know how to do that.
now they're actually seeing an increased incidence of thyroid cancer and other cancers related to the Chernobyl fallout in France, right?
Well, and it's very hard to get information from France.
Yeah.
We know it's very difficult, but we do know, for instance, that some of the latest studies shows an increase in leukemia in Germany.
Yes, and also in Sweden, the cancers increased.
Oh, yes.
So whichever country is actually studying the incidence of cancer post-Chernobyl in Europe is finding evidence of increased cancer. Then I was interested to read in the Chernobyl book, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and Nature, that fallout occurred more specifically in Alaska, Oregon, Idaho, New Jersey, New York, Florida, and Hawaii. In other words, the radiation is brought down from the troposphere and stratosphere by rain. So if it's not raining, you probably miss out on the most acute radiation, and you don't get such hot spots. But that's interesting too.
Yes, I mean, it's brought down by rain and snow.
Mm.
And, of course, the fallout from Chernobyl was not, you know, uniform around the planet. There are many hot spots. As you've just discussed.
The other thing to note too is that initially a lot of short-lived elements, intensely radioactive elements that only live for hours or days before they decay away to zero radiation, those elements get out when there's a meltdown, and sometimes in accidents at nuclear power plants around America too. And although they're short-lived, they're intensely radioactive. And so if you're immersed in a cloud of fallout from a nuclear accident, initially you're going to get one hell of a dose of radiation, right?
That's correct. But not many countries were taking measurements, so we don't really know how severe the fallout was or the amount and kind, because not all the countries measured them.
Yeah, I know that. Well, it took them a long time to wake up to what actually was going on. Talk about people being given inert potassium iodide tablets who live near nuclear reactors, Dr. Sherman. Why would they do that? And is it happening in the United States to people adjacent to reactors?
I like that question. One has to take the potassium iodide tablet within an hour or so, or several hours at the very most, of exposure to radioactive iodine. The potassium iodine is taken to block the uptake of the radioactive iodine in the person's thyroid. Right now, there are no plans to hand out potassium iodide to people living around nuclear power plants in the United States. It's strictly elective. Now, if you want it to be elective and you have a meltdown, how many people are going to go to a center of any kind and pick up the potassium iodide after a meltdown? And the fact that it's not going to do any good if it's not taken within an hour or so of the meltdown. So it's not really going to help anybody.
Yes.
And this is one of my pet peeves, is the fact that, well, they don't want to give it out because it would make people worry.
Yeah.
And maybe alert them that, gee, there might be a problem here. So it's a very useful medication, but it blocks only the uptake of radioactive iodine. It doesn't do anything about any of the other isotopes
that can cause cancer in many organs of the body.
Exactly. But, I mean, even that, which is, it's inexpensive, and it's relatively, you know, it's stable, so you could have a bottle of it on, sealed, you know, bottle on your shelf for years, and it would be perfectly okay. But it's not being done.
So, okay, as a physician and an expert in this area, Dr. Sherman, what would be your commentary on the nuclear industry in America at this time?
Well, I think it's irresponsible that they want to build more nuclear power plants. I understand why they want to, because they are asking for enormous subsidies from we, the taxpayers, which will make lots of money for these companies. But that we do not need nuclear power. It produces only about between 15 and 20% of the power in the United States. We now are making great strides with solar and wind. And the one thing that we don't talk about is conservation. I think that if every person understood the hazards of nuclear power, that they would be willing to cut back on by 20% their use of electricity.
Of course.
Which is relatively simple.
Mm.
And we could do away with these nuclear power plants.
Mm.
But we have in the United States one of the best Congresses money can buy.
Well, that's a terrible thing to say.
Well, it's true.
What about the White House?
Well, I don't know. I had great hopes that, you know, when President Obama said we would only look for safe, clean nuclear. Well, I think that's an oxymoronism. I mean, there is no such thing. But I hope that this does not come about. Certainly, the financial crisis in the world is against building any of these plants. Certainly, the companies are not going to put their own money forward to do this. And it's only with huge government subsidies paid by we, the taxpayers, that these will come about.
So it's really a socialized industry like the weapons industry, right?
Exactly.
It's okay to have...
Socialize the... the industry, and then we the taxpayers pay the price.
Yes, well, you mustn't have socialized medicine, but it's all right to have socialized nuclear power and socialized nuclear weapons, right?
Yes. Yes.
Now, there's another question I have for you, Dr. Sherman. What, as the editor of this wonderful book, what about you, and I could sign the letter as well, writing a letter to the editors of the American Medical Journal, the New England Journal of Medicine, Pediatrics, to say that this book has been published, summarizing some of the most important data, you know, so these publications do publish letters and start a sort of a campaign to get these facts known amongst the medical profession, our colleagues?
Well, I think this is a great idea, and I think that I would start with the pediatric literature, because this is the generation that's going to be most affected by this.
Mm. Well, I put an ad in the New England Journal of Medicine about the medical effects of a meltdown, and it happened serendipitously to be published the day after Three Mile Island melted down, and we got 500 new doctor members in a flash. And I republished it again, and it's signed by the doyens of American medicine at Harvard. I republished it again in 2005 in the Journal of Public Health, and I am thinking it needs to be published again in pediatrics. So I'm giving grand rounds at a hospital in New Jersey in June, and the person who's organised it is a pediatrician who belongs to the College of Pediatricians. So maybe we can get that ad published plus a letter from you and me signed extrapolating about a meltdown and using some of the Chernobyl data. Would that be a good idea?
Oh, I think it's a wonderful idea. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you thought of it.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. I want you to talk a bit more about this study and your thoughts, Dr. Sherman.
Well, you mean about the Chernobyl thing?
Yes, please.
I think that it's an absolutely remarkable book, and was put together with absolutely no funding, of extraordinarily little funding, by Alexei Yablokov. You should also know that Vasily Nestorenko, the second author, died a year ago, August. And he, at the time when Chernobyl happened, he was head of the Ukrainian nuclear establishment, and he commandeered an airplane and flew over Chernobyl with his monitoring equipment.
Mm.
And he was one of the few people who took any measurements at all. And subsequently, when he died 2 years ago as a result of many of the effects of radiation, it was a terrible loss of this great scientist. Alexei Yablokov, Professor Yablokov, who is a wildlife biologist, carried on and finished the work. And he asked me to do the editing, and without realizing how much work it would be and how long it would be, because they had no money and they said there was no way to pay anybody to put this book into English, I agreed to do it without knowing how difficult it would be. And it took me 14 months of essentially working 4 to 5 hours a day on it to get this done.
Goodness me.
So this was a book that was essentially brought out with no money and no corporate backing and nothing in the way of even any kind of backing from academia.
Well, here's another suggestion, Dr. Sherman. I'd like you to call the editor of the New York Review of Books and also the book reviewer at the New York Times and Washington Post. You just pick the phone up and tell them about the book, because they're probably unaware of it, and get your publisher to send them a copy, sort of express delivery.
The public can get this if they belong to a university that's a member of the New York Academy of Sciences, and they have a subscription, and you can download the book through the New York Academy of Sciences site at various and sundry universities throughout the world, and that's one of the ways to get it. For review copies, professors and physicians can contact the New York Academy of Sciences directly.
It's called again Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and Nature. We need to start publicising this book in all areas of the media. If any of you know Oprah Winfrey or Jon Stewart or any of the others, you could also get in touch with them. So, Dr. Sherman, I think that you need to start I'm living in Australia at the moment. I'll be there in June, though, publicising the book, and I'll help you if you would like to do that.
Well, that would be wonderful. And I look. I hope we can get together when you're here in June.
Yes. And if anyone who's listening has, and I know quite a lot of academics listen to the program as well as doctors, if anyone else has some other suggestions, you can contact me via the website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org. And Dr. Sherman, do you have a website where people can contact you?
I do. It's www.janette, spelled J-A-N-E-T-T-E. Sherman,
.com. Well, look, I think this is very exciting because this study is aching to be publicised. It's beyond imperative. Everybody in the world must know about what happened at Chernobyl, and particularly the American public, because they're being propagandised and brainwashed into thinking nuclear power is a good thing. And what, in fact, we need to do is close down all the reactors in America, 104, and indeed throughout the world, so that this dreadful, dreadful medical catastrophe never happens again. So I want to thank you very much, Dr. Sherman, for this interview.
Well, thank you very much to you. I appreciate it because you're the pioneer in this whole field.
Well, I'm not really. It was actually Dr. Goffman. I found out that Australia was going to export uranium and I knew nothing about it. So I went to the library at the university and got out a book called Poisoned Power in 1975, written by Goffman and a colleague, Arthur Tamplin. And I tell you, I nearly developed acute alopecia at the time with my hair falling out. I'd never read anything so dangerous in my medical career. So it was really John Goffman and Tamplin that started me off on this journey. In a way.
He was a wonderful human being.
Wasn't he? Yeah.
Yes.
He's not alive now. Anyway, thank you very much. And let's communicate by email anyway. And anyone who's listening who'd like to help, please join in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. My guest today on If You Love This Planet was Dr. Janette Sherman, an author and specialist in internal medicine and toxicology. She has recently completed the translation and editing of the book, Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and Nature, published by the New York Academy of Sciences in December 2009. Thank you for listening, and we'll be talking with you next week.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.